Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you very much for downloading us. Tell your friends about us. Rate us. Remember, 50,000 people, we can't all be wrong. So thank you for being one of those who are right and downloading us. We have a returning guest this week, and this is the B segment, 1054B to be specific. The B's are the guests, and we have a wonderful guest. As I said, he's a returner. He talked about encapsulated stem cells and their role in, for example, reversing type 1 diabetes, as I remember it last time. And this time, he's got another bioengineering feat. That is Dr. Vesai, and you can reach him at the Vesai Lab, VeiSehlab.rice.edu, the Vesai.lab, VeiSehlab.rice.edu, because Omid Vesai is a bioengineer who spent some time in the famous Robert Langer Lab at MIT. Bob Langer is a outstanding person who has engendered a huge amount of material science improvements in the world and innovative work, probably as innovative a scientist as you can find. And he's, if you will, been the godfather to many great scientists, including Omid. So, Omid, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on here.
And I'll ask you about Dr. Langer in a little bit. But before I do that, what's happened to the encapsulated stem cells and the treatment? First of all, you can refresh all of us on why you encapsulated them. And then what's happened with them and type 1 diabetes in your lab?
Yeah, so, you know, our lab is very interested in developing a wide array of biomaterials. These are materials that have been developed to interact with the host immune system in predictable ways. And, you know, one application that we focused on, and last time I was on here, we had a discussion about, was our recent publication where we encapsulated mesenchymal stem cells in hydrogels, biomaterial hydrogels, that allow for immunoisolation of these cells. So it protects them from the host immune system and allows these cells to live for a very long time adjacent to damaged tissue. And we have demonstrated in this particular model, which is focused on myocardial repair. This is damage that's caused after a heart attack. How do we repair that damage? And so that project is, you know, moving along really well. We're expanding our collaboration with Baylor, and you know, we're pushing that to large animal studies with the hopes of getting that into human patients within the next 5 years. So you know, and we remain interested in innovating various biomaterial solutions for a number of different applications. And so today, I'm excited to tell you about some of our work as it pertains to, you know, breast implants. These are, of course, devices that are available on the market today, and they come in a lot of different varieties. And that's one of the things that I think the public is not fully aware of, that, you know, there are differences when it comes to medical devices that go into the body. So I'm happy to tell you more about that.
So we know, so what the history has been is that the textured breast implant. So breast implants were, and you can give the history much better than I can, but recently there have been these textured breast implants that have a rare lymphoma. Sounds horrible. The good news is most are 100% curable by removing both the implant and the tumor. But the textured implants were thought to stay in place better, so they were used, but they are the ones associated with this lymphoma. And so I guess what you did was study what happens to the immune system and if there are materials that can be have the same stay-in-place effect but without having the what we would call the lymphoma. And I guess that you have a key article that came out in Nature in late June.
That's right.
About this.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when we think about breast implants, they're all made out of silicon. And silicon is a biomaterial that has been around for a very long time. It's used in many different types of implants. And when it comes to breast implants, people have been developing different types of implants since the early 60s. And as you mentioned, somewhere in the, I believe it was in the 80s, there was this concept which became more popular, which was applying a texturing process to the surface of these silicone implants. And you can kind of imagine like sandpaper. So the original implants were smooth in that they were, you know, very polished at this interface. The texturing created a topography, and it was thought that these topography would help keep this implants in place better. And there was also some anecdotal evidence and some animal studies which highlighted that perhaps, you know, these textured implants could help remove some of the complications, in particular scar tissue formation, capsular contracture. These are the typical complications that arise from implants. And so what has emerged today is on the market, there exists a number of different types of implants, different manufacturers, and these come with different degrees of texturing. And of course, there's the variety which is not textured at all. And so as a consumer, you know, you can go to your plastic surgeon and there's a lot of different offerings available. But what's interesting is one of the things that we learned is nobody really asks when they go to their plastic surgeon, what kind of implant am I going to get? Because typically each surgeon has a preference for a type and they always use that type. And one of the things that we wanted to help illuminate through the research that we did was that actually, you know, this texturing is critical and it affects the immune response that, you know, is caused by the implant. And as you alluded to, this is important because some of the really aggressively textured implants have been associated with this rare lymphoma, and the FDA asked the manufacturers of those particular implants, the BioCell in particular, to voluntarily remove it from the market in the United States, and the same happened in Europe as well. But there are other...
So I have two questions about that. Is it that particular implant, or is it the texturing that you found was a problem? And have you found materials that don't cause this immune response? And tell us more. We've learned so much about the immune system lately. Tell us more about the immune response. Is it a cellular response? Is it an antibody response? Is there a particular stem or a particular type of cells that this is responsible for? You've got so much knowledge. We want to engulf ourselves in all your knowledge so we know what to ask surgeons for any implant, because there are many implants that you get, a hip replacement, knee replacement, those are all implants. Many people get implants in their jaw or bones when they have a broken bone or have a cancer removed. So we want to really, drink deeply from your knowledge, Dr. Vasai. Again, we're talking with Omid Vasai, Vasai Lab, V-E-I-S-E-H-L-A-B, rice.edu, Rice, for where he is a faculty member and a scholar in cancer research in the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute Bioengineering at Rice University. So Dr. Vasai, keep talking to us.
Sure. So yeah, you know, when an implant goes into the body, in particular silicone-based implants or plastic implants, which are the most common types of implants that go into the body, These initiate an immune response. They're specialized cells, macrophages, neutrophils, and T cells that will immediately recognize this implant as a foreign substance. And the natural inclination of the body is to wall off the implant. And, you know, this happens like if you get a piece of glass maybe stuck underneath your skin, you get a cut. You know, if you don't remove that glass, the body's natural response is to essentially build additional skin tissue around the implant. We call that the scar tissue, the fibrosis tissue. This actually walls off the implant from the rest of the body. It's a protection mechanism that the body has developed. And one of the things that our research is, and many others have shown is that actually the chemistry and the physical properties of that surface will affect the type of immune response that happens. When it comes to texturing, one of our discoveries as part of this publication was that as you apply the texturing and you get more and more aggressive texturing, the immune response that follows it is one of much more inflammation. So inflammation means a lot more immune cells there. These immune cells are quite active. They're causing sort of a dilation of the blood vessels around it. It can lead to swelling. It can lead to pain. It can lead to, you know, the sensation of feeling hot. And that's really going to result in a lot of discomfort for the patient. And so our results showed that there's perhaps a sweet spot in that a little bit of texturing to the extent of 4 micron roughness was beneficial. But anything beyond it actually did a lot more harm than benefits of texturing. And the harm was just an added level of inflammation. And
so 4 microns is really, really tiny, right? I mean, what's the typical plastic container? It must be much more than that. I mean, a micron is, it's smaller than a pinhead by a lot. What's a pinhead in microns?
Yeah, exactly. So 4 micron is really small. If you were to rub your hands on the surface of one of these implants, it would feel like it's gripping a little bit, but if you actually looked at it, you couldn't really make out the actual roughness. You can think about like a very fine sandpaper. And one of our hypotheses is that this particular sort of size of texturing, these ruffles, are good because they're about the same size as immune cells. So immune cells naturally form these bridges. So on this type of a surface, it's much more biocompatible and the cells respond much better to that interface. As you increase the texturing and you create bigger peaks and valleys on the surface at that scale, it causes a lot of inflammation because immune cells tend to get stuck in those crevices, and then they need to be able to survey surfaces. So there's a lot of transport, immune cells coming in, immune cells coming out. And as those complications happen, it leads to the additional inflammation. It leads to actually, in our results showed this, thicker capsules. And those capsules correlate with complications seen in human patients. And these would be riffling, capsular contracture, aesthetically won't look pleasing, and it would be painful to the patient. And there's also the potential complication of ALCL with the more extreme texturing.
Gotcha. We're running out of time. You've been just so generous and great with your time and information today. What do you expect? Let me go in and say, if we were here 3 years from now, would there be a material that doesn't cause this that can be developed and can be absolutely safe for breast implants and for other uses? And do you expect that to be available soon?
Yeah, so, you know, what's great about this particular study is that these implants with the 4 microns do exist on the market today. And you know, it's good because patients can now have a much more informed discussion with their plastic surgeon and think about, you know, perhaps they should be using a biocompatible surface implant. And our work just really adds to the body of knowledge that's developing with that respect. But in the future, something that my lab is working on and others is to actually create what we considered bioengineered, these are tissue engineered concepts for, tissue replacement, which are going to be cellular based, not really using plastics, but really rebuilding the tissue from the ground up. And that's really what our hope is in terms of creating, new products for patients that are actually a replacement of the tissue. You know, you can think about a mastectomy patient, a patient that had to have breast removed, replacing that with actual breast tissue as opposed to a plastic implant. That's really what we hope will happen in the more distant future. For the near future, I think our research sort of informs that, hey, there's a number of different options out there for patients. They really need to be paying attention to what's going in their body. And as you mentioned, it's important not just for breast implants, but any type of implant you're getting, you should have that discussion with your clinician.
Thanks very much. Dr. Vasai Lab, VEISEHLAB.rice.edu. We'll be back next week with another wonderful guest. Remember, last week's guest, sensational, talked about the dangers of heat illness. Corinne Hudson, who is an associate professor at Georgetown and a MedStar physician, but also team physician for two Washington teams. I also want to highlight one that was 1052B, but I want to highlight one that I thought was absolutely sensational. Dr. Jill Maura Rabin, R-A-B-I-N, Mind Over Bladder, 1049B. So you'll want to listen to that one. We'll be back next week. Remember the A's. Thanks for downloading us so much on the A's. The A's are always the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. Persona Nutrition is our sponsor. You can take the free test at PersonaNutrition.com. Find out what your how good your diet is. Remember, turns out 93% or more of Americans are missing the estimated annual need for 50% or more of Americans in one or more vitamins or minerals. Find out how your diet compares and whether it looks like you're appropriate to get something or whether your diet is one of the really good ones. I was surprised 55% of us don't get enough magnesium, and magnesium actually increases, lack of magnesium increases your risk of dying from any of the causes, what we call all-cause mortality. Talk to you later, and hope you'll download us later. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Caitlin, for great engineering, but especially thank you for downloading us.